From the unexplained to the mundane, come join us on a journey to the fringe. Hello and welcome to Journey to the Fringe, where it really actually hasn't been 48 hours since we last talked to you guys, at least in our time, so we got no money to report back for. Chelsea, no. Anything?
No, still poor.
Well, we are your podcast hosts of the same financial status as before, Taylor and Chelsea. Here today, I'm not actually sure. I have no idea what you're doing, Chelsea. All I know is you sent me a cup when I asked you if you had an episode ready.
Yes. From the position that I sit, with no money that nobody sent me, and from...
Wait, Chelsea.
Yeah.
I just want to see, are you saying they're not deserving of an episode?
Yeah, that's about it, guys.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to Journey to the Fringe. Bye. We're back. We are hoping that you will send us money, so we'll just continue doing this. I am so sick of Kiel and the Mothman prophecies right now. I was going to do something related, and I thought, fuck that. Maybe in another time. So I decided to do a cryptid that I've been meaning to do. Well, I don't know if he's a cryptid. I guess we'll discuss that at the end. But I'm doing a thing that has been on my mind for a while. So buckle your seatbelts. It's the story of Sam the Sundown Clown. Have you heard of this guy before?
I feel like it came up in an episode recently, but I can't say I know anything about him.
Maybe that's why I was thinking about him. Anyhow, Sam the Sundown Clown. Damn, that is hard to say. Sundown Clown was a strange being encountered by two young children while vacationing at Lake Common, Sundown, Isle of Wight in the UK in May of 1973.
And oh, so you've been saying Sundown?
Yeah.
Because I've been hearing sundown. Sundowny is like people with dementia. As the sun goes down, they like lose mental capacity. This really changes what I think of this clown now.
Now, was I saying? No, I'm pretty sure I was saying.
I think you were saying Sundown. I was just misinterpreting it, assuming that you were saying it wrong.
Okay, hold on though. Because my document is labeled Sundown Clown. Now I don't know. Was I saying the wrong? Anyhow, it's the Sundown Clown. I caught it pretty early on in the episode this time. So hopefully I continue on with saying that. Just to set the scene, these kids have this encounter in Sundown in the UK when they're on vacation. And it's like a little seaside town in the southern end of the Isle of Wight. The town has a rich history stretching back to the Roman period when the area was used primarily for salt production. And up until the 19th century, Sundown was exclusively used as a military site since the beaches offered easy access to invading French troops. Lots of history. With the arrival of the train in the 1800s, Sundown grew into the beach resort town that it would become known as in the 20th and 21st centuries, and today, Sundown is a traditional British seaside town featuring a long stretch of sandy beach, a high street filled with restaurants and shops, various attractions including a wildlife sanctuary and a dinosaur museum, lots of dinosaur bones there, and a quintessential Victorian pier with a large arcade and beautiful views of the cliffs and sea. Sundown apparently has its fair share of paranormal happenings as well, such as UFO sightings and poltergeist activity. I literally talk about none of that, so I'm just gonna take their word for it. So the entity itself that the kids encountered was a shy but friendly being and spoke kindly to the children for almost half an hour before they returned to their parents. It seemingly vanished after the encounter and has never been seen again. That's it. That's the only encounter with this being ever recorded anywhere.
Is there a chance there was just a clown working the street?
Tell me if that's what you think it is after we talk about the encounter.
Okay.
I mean, I guess there's always a chance of that, I guess. Like a hobo clown. You know the kind I'm talking
about. Yeah, I guess it's not New Jersey. Like, that's, I would picture that in Jersey Shore, not fancy England.
True. true. Yeah, England is so fancy. British Andy lives there.
Has anybody seen Sam the Sandown Clown and British Andy in the same room?
Oh, no. Never. It's okay. Never come up. Before getting into the actual encounter of Sam the Sandown Clown, I want to first introduce the primary source of the event, which is the British UFO Research Association, or BUFORA, which is a very catchy name.
That's a beautiful acronym.
I know.
BUFORA.
BUFORA. BUFORA was
You can buy makeup at that kind of acronym.
You could.
Off-brand BUFORA. Makeup, but makeup nonetheless.
Yeah, totally off-brand. BUFORA was founded in 1964 to investigate UFO reports around the British Isles. According to their website, BUFORA is a, quote, non-cultist and scientifically evaluative organization, end quote. I love how it's non-cultist.
Yeah, it's not a cult. That's how you know it's not a cult. They told you way too fast.
We forgot to put that in our name. Until 2005, they published the BUFORA Journal, where the story of Sam the Sundown Clown appeared in the January-February 1978 issue. Cover of the issue features a drawing of Sam, who appears as a tall, robot-like humanoid speaking into a microphone hooked up to an audio device. The caption underneath dramatically asks, quote, "Ghost or spaceman?" It's all in caps, so I had to say it really loud. Quote, "This is the sole location of the report of SSC. I'm going to read to you the encounter right from BUFORA because it was never a BUFORA publication because it's never reported anywhere else. And the encounter, which starts with the father of one of the children's dad, is Mr. Y. So this is where the reports start, and I'm going to read it right now. Let me just go to the top because I'm not prepared for this. Okay, so report extra. Ghost or spaceman, 73. I'm indebted to Leonard Cramp for advising Mr. Y to write to me concerning his own and his daughter's experiences, and to Mr. Y himself for providing me with a very complete dossier of events. Of necessity, these have had to be encapsulated. Nevertheless, they make interesting reading. Mr. Y has requested anonymity because of his daughter's involvement, Ed. So here's where it starts. Tuesday, 20th of October, 1970. Around 7 p.m., Mr. Y was driving from Shanklin to ride via Seaview to see a friend. Passing through the village of Bradding, he turned right to St. Helens and then became aware of a large multi-lit aircraft to his right about halfway between the road and Bembridge Downs. It looked enormous as it flew low over swampy terrain. He stopped the car and watched. The object hovered apparently aimlessly over the swampy margins of the River Yar. A wide ring of seven or more lights could be seen, each of them a large and clearly defined sphere, like a bright red cherry, and interspersed with a turquoise and white light, no sound could be heard. Our witness drove on and the object flew parallel. Once outside St. Helens, it cut across about 300 yards behind him and dropped slowly, meandering above distant hedges, now appearing smaller with the number of red lights reduced to four, which seemed to rotate slowly. Mr. Y again stopped at this time and used his torch to signal for some 10 minutes, during which time the object weaved backwards and forwards without settling. He then continued on to his appointment. When he reached his destination, the red lights were still there, and he left his own rear lights on to face the object. Coming out of the house, his friend could see the thing also playing hide-and-seek between the treetops. As he continued on to ride, the lights were lost to view and our witness saw them no more. On several subsequent occasions, he noticed signal balls of red light in the sky, which would hang stationary or follow him along as though checking his movements. But on the 1st of March 1972, a considerably more frightening incident occurred. Again, this is the father of the two kids who have the experience with Sam. It was between 9 p.m. and 10 p.m. and Mr. Y was perched on the cliffside at Compton Bay, having been driven there by an unexpected tidal surge, seemingly caused, in part at least, by some form of droning underwater craft. From his vantage point, he observed two points of light, yellow and peering up at me like the eyes of some horrible sea monster. He guessed the eyes were not much more than 40 feet away and were just below the surface of the sea, like a sort of periscope. They disappeared, and as the tide gradually subsided, Mr. Y was able to get back to his car and drive home. At no time did he tell his young daughter of anything he had experienced, but at the beginning of May 1973, when she was 7 years old, she claimed to have had a very weird encounter indeed. And this part's titled Sandown Spaceman or Golf Links Ghost. Faye, or so we shall call her, was near Lake Common Sandown on a Tuesday afternoon about 4 o'clock with a boy about her own age when they both heard a weird wailing noise not unlike an ambulance siren. They followed it across the golf links and through a hedge leading to the swampy meadow adjacent to a little-used Sandown airport, the noise ceased. As they were crossing a wooden footbridge over a narrow brook, a blue-gloved hand appeared from under the bridge and a strange figure emerged. The figure fumbled with a book, dropped it in the water, then splashed about to retrieve it. The two then watched the figure enter a metallic hut, similar to those used on building sites except that it had no windows. It moved along with a strange hopping motion with knees raised high. The children wandered off and were over 50 yards away when the figure, brackets, which from now on will be referred to as he, I love that they clarify this in here, end bracket. They don't say why they come to that conclusion though. Reappeared carrying a black knobbed microphone with a white flex attached. The wailing noise immediately returned, this time being so loud that the boy was scared and began to run away. Noise ceased and he spoke into the microphone, and although so far off, the children could hear his voice as clearly as though they were right near them. "Hello, are you still there?" he asked, and in response to what sounded a friendly tone, they ventured close enough to speak to the oddly attired person. He was nearly 7 feet tall and had no neck, for his head appeared to be wedged straight onto his shoulders. He wore a yellow, pointed hat, which interlocked with the red collar of a green tunic. A round, black knob was affixed to the top of his hat, and wooden antennae were attached on either side. The face had triangular markings for eyes, a brown square of a nose, and motionless yellow lips. Other round markings were on his white paper cheeks, and a fringe of red hair fell onto his forehead. Wooden slats protruded from his sleeves, and from below his white trousers, his first communication was in writing. "Hello," he wrote in a notebook in a large hand. "Hello, I am all colors. Sam." The boy was hesitant, but Frey read each word as it was pointed to. This was necessary as the words were not laid out in conventional sequence. The children ventured closer and discovered that the creature could talk without the aid of a microphone. Though his lips did not move and speech was unclear, rather like that of a person who does not open his mouth properly. He asked the children about themselves, so they ventured to ask questions too. He asked about his clothes, which were all ripped, and he told them he only had one set so he could only wear those. Because of his strange white features, they asked if he was really a man. The answer was a chuckled, "No." I don't know how you would chuckle that. They also asked if he was a ghost. The vague reply was, "Well, not really, but I am in an odd sort of way." "What are you then?" he continued, but only obtained the answer, "You know," with no further explanation.
Oh man, this guy's great.
He also said
Stephen Greer needs to interview him.
Oh yeah. He also said he had no name. There are others like himself though, and he drew a rough sketch of one of them. He also confided that he was frightened of people and scared they might hurt him. Apparently, if attacked, he would not fight back.
They didn't test it?
No, I get... Well, I mean they're kids.
Okay.
At his invitation, the children crawled through a flap into his hut. These freaking kids, I mean, they shouldn't do that.
It was the 70s, though.
I know.
They didn't have the stranger danger we were taught.
Oh my god. So, into his hut, which contained two levels. The lower had plenty of headroom and was wallpapered in blue-green and covered with a pattern of dials. It also had an electric heater and simple wooden furniture. The upper level was less spacious and the floor was metallic. He told the children that he fed upon berries, which he collected in the late afternoon. He didn't say where, but did indicate that he had a camp on the mainland he can go to. He also said that the water from the river could be drunk once he had cleaned it. Once inside the hut, he removed his hat to reveal round, white ears and sparse brown hair. Before eating a berry, he performed an odd conjuring trick. He placed the berry in his ear, thrust his head forward, and caused the berry to disappear and reappear at one of his odd eyes. Repeating the process, the berry traveled to his mouth. In brackets, a possible explanation could be that he was wearing some kind of protective mask and analyzing the berry to check it wasn't poisonous. End bracket.
Could he not have just been doing a magic trick, though?
Yeah, he could have. That was what I was thinking, like a sleight of hand something?
Yeah, especially if they're 7 years old. If you know a magic trick, you're probably going to show it to them.
Yeah, I mean, and they're going to know no better. I like that they jump to a wild one, though, that
yeah.
He's wearing a mask and checking if it's poisonous. I mean, sleight of
hand.
He's
been eating them for days and he's checking if it's poisonous.
I mean, this is kids, so I mean, if it might not have even been a good sleight of hand, and they would have probably said, this is like it came out his mouth, he put it in his ear. The children talked to the strange being for half an hour or more. Then after saying goodbye, they rushed across the golf links to tell the first man they met that they'd seen a ghost. He merely laughed. The children were convinced of their experience and that the being was either a ghost or someone dressed up. Faye told her father...
He definitely dressed up.
He definitely... Or maybe didn't dress up because his clothes were all ripped.
Yeah.
He put on his worst clothes. He told her father of her experience some 3 weeks later, Jesus, on the 2nd of June, 1973. At first, he found the story quite unbelievable, but was amazed at the detailed account and Faye's certainty as to its truth. She was quite upset when he suggested she'd made it up or invented it. Mr. Y saw the boy, but found him not easy to communicate with, though he did get a statement from him verifying that he'd seen it too. Apart from make-believe, other possibilities considered include a shared hallucination and a deliberate hoax by someone. There was such an extraordinary amount of detail, however, which include the further point that the creature clearly only had 3 fingers on each blue-gloved hand and 3 toes on his bare white feet, making a deliberate hoax somewhat difficult, and indeed, why go to all that trouble? Why does that detail appear there in this article?
Good question.
What an odd place for it to be. Mr. White tells me that although bizarre, certain elements of the story rang true to him, and he also took account of the possibility of some connection with his own previous experiences. Summing up, he says, quote, I get the impression that Faye was somehow taken into a bubble of alien reality created by this strange personage. He told them he had just made the hut. Also, Faye told me that while they were talking to this ghost, 2 workmen nearby were repairing a post. They paid no attention to the weird charade as though they could not see it, end quote.
Or they're used to the guy.
Oh, that's just Sam.
He got 3 fingers, 3 toes. Yeah. He's got that one magic
trick. Poison berries.
We keep giving him poison berries, which is why he's so bloated.
Yeah, and he's high as fuck. That's why he's using a microphone.
We gave him the microphone, too.
Well, ghost, spaceman, imagination, hoax, or hallucination? Take your pick. Just a child's make-believe? Perhaps there are a number of unusual elements in the story, and it is very detailed. Remember, too, that quite a percentage of reports of sightings come from children. Brackets. The Welsh flap is a case in point. In particular, the box dropping incident and the humanoid report from Broadhaven School. See volume 6, number 1. What the fuck is a box dropping incident?
Yeah, I think, Chelsea, we just got a ton of things for our research document.
One last point. Mr. Y visited the spot but could find no metal hut anywhere in sight, nor any indication of one. Not really surprising, no matter in what light one views the children's story for. To make a comparison, how often are traces found in reported UFO landings? The case rests.
I mean, I don't think it's that surprising that the construction hut had been moved after he lured two children into it for half an hour and people saw it.
Or didn't see it, apparently.
No, the two construction guys appeared to have seen it.
So that's the sighting. What do you think of it?
In my mind, this is really just kids meeting a homeless person for the first time and kind of embellishing, not embellishing, but like seeing something that wasn't quite there with the experience, because that matches up a lot with just how I feel a kid would interact with an outsider.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And
I mean, there are other explanations, even like of it happening, not just like a ghost or, you know, it's just a child's interpretation. I mean, the thing that's creepy about it is the physical appearance with the clown, like the red hair and like the triangle eyes and stuff and the mouth not moving.
Yeah. Which, I mean, also, they did say that it sounded like his mouth wasn't opening when he was talking. There's a chance this guy had a stroke and only a part of his mouth opened.
That's true. Some people do talk like that with very little mouth movement. You know the people I'm talking about. And my other thought while I was reading it was how much of this, with the dad's background in his sightings, when they kind of said that they thought it was a ghost, how much was he kind of feeding the paranormal details into it?
Not only that, the fact that, like, at home, there may be kind of a culture of talking about these things. So seeing something outside of what you're normally expecting, yeah, you get that feeling of this is what's happening, so you add these details.
Yeah. I mean, there are details that are in that article that I wouldn't expect a child to come up with. And they do even speculate in there with the mask and the poison berry that they are putting it through a mask, which is just a wild thing to jump to, I think.
Yeah.
So there is a little bit in the article, and some of the stuff I think a kid wouldn't come up with. They definitely probably said, oh, like, did he do this? I can't think of a specific example because that's how I work. But yeah, creepy the way that it's presented, nonetheless.
Yeah, I mean, if everything is just taken as true, yeah, it is a truly bizarre story. And either way, it is a bizarre story, particularly the fact that their stories do match up in particular points. Like the fact that they both say there's three digits on all extremities.
Yeah. What do you think? Like, it was 3 weeks later that she brought it up.
Yeah.
And how do you think they came to the conclusion that he had three fingers and three toes? Do you think that's a detail that the children noticed?
I think so. Although it could have come up in questioning them both together, I don't know for sure. That is the part of the problem of it being 3 weeks later and then that it not coming out with actual investigation, but a dad forcing a kid to give us a statement.
I don't even know that as an adult, that if I was just having a regular interaction with something, I probably just think that everything's normal if I come across a clown in the woods. I don't know that I'm going to pay attention to the fingers.
Yeah, fair enough.
Like, it might go over my head.
But also,
I mean, it is a 30-minute encounter.
It is a 30-minute encounter. And if somebody has never met somebody who's missing digits, or you're just used to normals, like, if one kid pointed it out, that would be something that they would remember.
That's true, but it doesn't sound like they pointed it out too. Maybe they did, because it doesn't say everything that they asked him. Maybe they're like, I see you only have three fingers. three toes.
Yeah, well, yeah, the entire story does not take up 30 minutes of conversation.
So maybe they bring it up. I just, see, I'm the type of person.
You know, they were sitting around the table and the dad asked, like, repeatedly, how was your day over the course of 3 weeks? And she just said, good. And like, do you do anything? No. No. And then just like out of nowhere one day, she just kind of brings it up.
Yeah. Remember when we were in Sandown? We saw a clown in the bush and we went into his house.
For 30 minutes. He ate those berries. Only had three fingers.
Put the berry in his ear. It came out his mouth.
Do you remember? That was fun.
Oh yeah, a kid would bring it up that way too.
And it was like when they were late for something too, so they're really rushing.
Oh, that's how kids always bring things up. So, no spacecraft or even terrestrial vehicle was observed at the time of the incident, and only the children saw and spoke to the being. Its shack had vanished before further research could be carried out, and workmen near the site reported nothing out of the ordinary. Which, Taylor brought up a good point, that just means that he wasn't potentially out of the ordinary, and that Sam is always there. The children were insistent that this encounter really happened for the remainder of their lives. Their parents initially disbelieved them, but when they continued to talk about the encounter in vivid detail, Bufora was contacted by the parents and all details logged in their archives. So that's the end of that. I think we just had a pretty lengthy discussion about possible explanations. I feel like our explanations make sense. But let's talk about some more. There are several explanations as to what the being could have been. Theories include a human wearing a costume, a fairy, a ghost, or other type of paranormal or supernatural creature, a robot, an extraterrestrial possibly wearing a costume, a hoax, a shared hallucination, or folie à deux. I'm just gonna scratch that one out. I don't think it was a shared hallucination unless they were also eating the poison berries. The creature could have also been made up by the kids who saw it. I think that one's probably unlikely because the people who were working close by did remember the kids walking past them. As far as Sam being an alien, Sam's story with the hut could have potentially been a UFO, and it also seems to be what Mr. Y is implying by tying Faye's interaction with Sam to his own UFO sighting. I agree with that one, because he clearly, that's why he tells the story. And then, you know, I think he probably jumps to conclusions and leads it a little bit there, was my thought.
Yeah, well, he's not an investigator, so I don't blame him for asking leading questions. Unlike people that we've looked at in the past who definitely do that.
Who should be, you know, not asking leading questions. Sam as a ghost. Faye and Harry were convinced Sam was some sort of wandering specter. When the children asked Sam if he was a ghost, Sam seems to consider the possibility with his cryptic response, well, not really, but I am in an odd sort of way. Maybe.
Could we not just interpret that as him saying like he didn't feel like he was human because he's a homeless person who people look down on, but he's not quite
this
dead.
Could also be somebody with a mental illness.
Yeah.
He's had a stroke that isn't seeing reality properly. I mean, why they're dressed up as a clown? Maybe it was the Joker. I don't know. I'm just having some word vomit at the moment as to what it could be. But I really don't think it's a ghost. It would just make it more confusing if he was a ghost. Why would he be a ghost?
Why would he say he wasn't a ghost then?
Why would he be a ghost? I don't know. Sam is a human. Not to make the story dark, but Sam's interest in the children and inviting them into his weird swampy shack certainly sounds like a kidnapping attempt. I don't know about that because he let them go.
Yeah. Well, maybe the family, he knew the family didn't have any money at a certain
maybe.
Point.
Maybe. The fact that the children didn't mention being held captive or feeling threatened makes me think this wasn't necessarily an encounter with malicious intent. If Sam was a human, his strange appearance and mannerisms could very well have been linked to drug or alcohol abuse, mental health, poison berries, or similar reasons. Children are likely to conjure up bizarre descriptions of people that appear odd to them. Yeah, that one I think is good.
Yeah.
Sam is a shared hallucination. I'm not even reading this one because that's not what it is. Sam is a prank. Children get bored. When children get bored, they make up stories to entertain themselves. Children have such a vivid and wonderful imagination, so this could have been a childish prank that Faye's father took seriously because of his prior experience. Sam the underappreciated cryptid. So, this is the end of the episode. We've given our opinions throughout. Do you have anything else left to question?
Other than we do need to invest in mental health facilities and treatments, I feel like this might be a good story that gives an example of why.
Yeah, I mean, this was the 70s, so I'm sure it's come a hell of a far way since then.
It was actually a little better back then, just because we had sanitariums at the time.
Yeah, it's definitely something we still need to invest in. Population goes up, we need to expand. I only say that because I was just talking about it. The city's infrastructure isn't keeping up with the population and the housing being built, but I digress.
Yeah. And with that, I have been Taylor here with Chelsea. We are Journey to the Fringe. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to Journey to the Fringe. If you have liked what you have listened to, please like, share, subscribe, or follow, depending on what venue you are listening to us through. Also, please, if possible, leave a 5-star review, as that really helps us in the algorithms. Should you wish to interact with us, please check us out on your social media of choice. I bet you we are there. And if you really want to communicate with us and give us ideas for new episodes or tell us that we're wrong and terrible, either way, please send us an email at journeytothefringe@gmail.com. For now, I'll see you in the next episode.